This is the Wheelhouse Podcast. Catherine Bates is here. My name's Joel Spreadborough. Before anything else, we've made it to episode 7, and there's a very important commemoration of that milestone. Kate Bates, merchandising.
Merchandising. Yeah, sun's out, guns out, Jolly. I know we're heading towards summer, but check out those weapons.
The pythons.
Is that what they're called?
I don't know.
I think we need to be really careful with that nickname.
Now I'm embarrassed.
Let's jump straight into
it. I do have a tattoo of the Sydney Opera House, actually.
Oh, very good. You don't appear to know which arm it's on.
No, always forget. Anyway. Never forget where my Darth Vader tattoo is, though. It's all things Welter is this week. Of course it is now. We love talking about the wearing of the red or the...
Ho-ho.
The ho-ho. I'm wondering if it maybe should be changed to green and gold in honour of an outstanding result in stage 5.
Yes. Wow. Jay Vine.
Wow.
What a legend. From the esports world to the mountains of Spain, there appears nothing he can't do. Although he's not wearing the rojo. He won the stage, but he's not in the rojo. I just like saying that.
He's in the green rojo.
Yeah. He's in the blue Alpecin.
The Alpecin Phoenix colours. I'm fascinated by this journey. I want to ask you about this because we were watching some clips of him not long ago, but it wasn't him. It was an animated version of him riding the Zwift, the esports, dominating. Now he's winning in Spain in live action. How does it work, Kate Bates?
Well, I mean, tremendous win. So he attacked on the final climb. And he held off the likes of Remco Evenepoel, you know, one of the most talented young men or spoken about in that way in the sport. And he won. I mean, it was just a sensational win and really powerful attack. His development path, as you mentioned, is a really interesting one. So he came from Zwift Academy, which is essentially esports. So you pop your bike on a trainer indoor, you fire up your device, be it a laptop or an iPad, whatever you use. And you look at yourself, it's like a video game. And the Zwift Academy, they're using it as talent identification. And I think this will be a real moment for them. They do it for both the men and the women. So when the female winner of Zwift Academy gets a professional contract with Canyon SRAM, the women's team, and for the men, it's Alpecin. So fantastic setup and encouragement. But I think until now, it's been a really nice theory. And we've wondered, will it be successful? Is this a good way to talent ID? It turns out it's a really good way to talent ID. And I also think because Jay Vine is still pretty dedicated to the Zwift platform, he's such a dynamic rider. So he has this power profile and these really snappy kind of 5 to 10 second accelerations that a lot of the other climbers won't have. And that is because in the esports world, if you can imagine, Joel, there's no dead pedaling. So in real life, you can stop pedaling on downhills when you're in a bunch. You can stop pedaling a little bit and you keep up. But in the esports world, you pretty much don't stop pedaling for the entire time. And that builds a bit of a different athlete. It's so cool.
It's an unconventional path to the top.
There's definitely a documentary in this one.
What are you going to call it? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but what do you want to call it?
Jay Vine, The Rise of the Alpecin Phoenix.
I heard it on the grapevine.
Oh, I like that. And his wife, Bree, is also like a world-class esports athlete.
Yeah, it's all in the family.
Yeah, so when Jay won and got this opportunity to race professionally, they packed up their house in Canberra, they moved to Girona, sort of pretty brave. They were like, Indeed. Oh, what's the worst that can happen? And Bree, of course, went with him to support him. Now, she took her bike, took her trainer, and has become a world-class esports rider as well. So, like, keep it in the family. Yeah. But she is very much a big part of his success, a huge part, because the support she gives him, like, they are the dream team, the Vines, absolute dream team. And she had some pretty cool posts on social media. Joel, super emotional. I sent her a message. I directed the Australian team at Esports World Championships last year, so I got to know Bree through there. It was just a really special moment, I think, not just for Jay, but for Bree and for everybody who has followed their journey.
I think it's safe to say the Vines are growing on everyone because it's an extraordinary result. And the fact that it is in the family, all of that, Now, I just have to say, if video games to real life were a thing, I have saved the world so many hundreds of times in video games, I would be like the universe, the hero of the universe. But unfortunately, look, congratulations, team. Congratulations to Zwift, because it clearly works. Yeah. I wonder if other sports will start to see a bit more of that.
I don't know. It's
hard because the recreation of cycling is probably a lot more, I guess, realistic.
Yeah. I mean, they're talking about putting it in the Olympics. So they're very seriously talking about it for LA.
Yeah.
And that's off the back of actually some pressure from the technology companies who want to see esports put in. But there's very few that have the same athleticism.
Yeah.
So it is an interesting one. But I want to show you this, Jolly. Just take a look at this. Tell me what you see.
I see nothing. We think Jay Vine won stage five. We're pretty sure.
It's cloud. It is cloud cover, and you can kind of see the barriers through there. Jump on the socials if you're listening along. Otherwise, you can see this. That's his biggest victory, his first professional victory, stage six of the Vuelta. You can't even see him.
And you can't, you know, the one thing, you know this, you win a race, you want to get a happy snap. You want to have a nice photo to put on your mantelpiece.
No happy snaps.
This is a photo of mist, fog, rain, horrendous conditions, which makes the win even more special, to be honest. But you honestly, like, he crossed the line and then he just disappeared into mist.
It is.
And fog.
And I think that we need to send our thoughts and prayers to the soigneurs who do the washing, because for all of the riders who thought it was a good idea to wear white socks today, you know, may they rest in peace, those white socks. Indeed. Never the same again.
No, look, not to take anything away from an outstanding victory. Let's stay with Vuelta. It's been obviously the biggest deal in the world of the week. I don't care about anything else. Now, I want to talk about, we love talking about resurgences, comebacks. Sam Bennett, call it luck of the Irish, or do you call it bloody good racing, Kate Bates? His career.
I think we call it bloody good racing.
I think you say form is permanent.
Yes. Well, class is certainly permanent.
Yeah.
So a couple of years ago, Sam Bennett, in quite unceremonious way, was booted from Quickstep. Mr. Patrick Lefevre, the man who we love to hate.
He's always,
He's a very divisive team director.
The pantomime villain of world cycling.
He says it how it is. And, you know, I suppose in many ways he makes a lot of decisions for his team to get press.
Yeah.
So even if it's not in the sporting or even if it's not very kind, he does it because people talk about it. So, you know, maybe I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that in the background he might be a nice fella, but he's just playing this supervillain. At any rate, he essentially told the world that he thought Sam Bennett was talentless and a sook. And that I think he even said from memory that he had some mental problems. Jeez, that got me going when I was like, come on, I think that's crossing a line. Sam Bennett's so classy. He just, you know, continued to paddle his own canoe. He found a really good home at Bora. I think what's really interesting about their approach to the Vuelta is they've got Grand Tour winner from the Giro, Jai Hindley, the Aussie, go Aussie go. But they went in with a dual approach, also taking Sam Bennett for the sprints. There's not a lot of sprint stages at the Vuelta, but they were top heavy at the beginning. And they knew that in doing so, they were sacrificing some potential workers for the GC push. But they've given Bennett the opportunity. He has absolutely run with it. Mm-hmm. He ended up in the green jersey, Joel. He looked like Kermit the Frog. Like a big Kermit. And because of his voice, his accent as well. I can't do an Irish accent. Can you?
Oh, not really, Kate.
Oh,
I have a little crack here and there, but I'm not overly talented. But the stage two win, it's almost 700 days after his last GT success. And I want to ask you the question, aside from the fact that sprinters are like Lazarus with coming back, Cavendish, him, the list goes on. Do you think Bora is sitting there just a tiny little bit, oopsie-daisy, with the whole Tour de France omission?
I don't think so. I mean, I think what defines really well-organized teams is that they spend a lot of time and resources making decisions. that are backed by things like data, but also instinct.
Yep.
And they back it and they move on. Because learning from a mistake with selection like that has to be done very quickly and then you move on. You cannot hang around on those sorts of decisions because that will change the good decision-making you have in the future. Now, these team directors and managers are paid pretty good money, and they're paid pretty good money because they've got great instincts, they've got great experience. They do make mistakes, but I think it's easy for us on the outside, and it doesn't matter how much I know about cycling and how inside world I am, we have to accept that they know more than us.
Yeah,
it's hard to do, I know, Joel. We all like to be experts in our own domain, but and so I don't think that they made
and
a
they
bad
also,
error.
They know the ins and outs. They know what's going on with the cyclist, the cyclist, the team mentality within inside the walls of the inner sanctum is obviously private to an extent as well. I guess they need to make decisions that are going to benefit them that we don't necessarily always need to know about.
Well, and the riders need to trust that too.
Yeah.
And I think you see the teams that operate really well when hard decisions are made and everybody's talking about it, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Because they trust it. They know they don't need to defend it or talk about it. When it does hit the media, and I'm talking about Sam Bennett at Quickstep, we've seen it a lot. When they do come out, you know that the team is not in great shape. They don't trust each other. They don't trust management. And that is just not a working model. But I think Sam Bennett can be one of the greats. He's got a lot more left in his legs. It'll be a tough time to get through the Vuelta. We'll talk about it a little bit later, but around Worlds.
Yep.
Will he come to Australia and try on such a tough course?
Yep.
I'm not sure that he will, but, you know, big things for Sam Bennett. And if nothing else, he's back. He's kind of broken that 700-day hex.
Yep.
And he's back. And I think
Bennett's
back.
Celebrating in the streets from Belfast to Dublin, yes. Let me tell you. Congratulations to him, stages 2 and 3 in the Netherlands. I want to just quickly highlight a quirky-ish moment, a moment of piety, I think is the word, before the start of stage 3. You know what I'll call it? A biblical start to stage 3. And also, I have a few questions around this. So it was the longest day in the saddle. It was about 193 Ks. Starts and finishes in Breda.
Breda, yes.
Thank you.
In the Netherlands.
The Church of Breda at the start of the
me to church. I apologize, everybody, for that. that's a great song, though. Interesting.
Oh, you got to have faith.
They did have, you can see us at, you know, the club later, Joel and I. We make a great singing.
Karaoke duo.
Not. The Dutch, when Jumbo were kind of swapping around the Rojo jersey, they had Dutch riders in the red. Started with Robert Hessink.
Mm-hmm.
Give that one a go, Jolie. And so I think in one way it was beautifully symbolic, you know, to have the Dutch riders who'd worn red in red parading through. A little bit cautious about
modern sensitivities, perhaps?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that it's really that well considered. But,
look,
I mean, that's cycling, isn't it, right? Like it, not to get too politically correct about things, but I think cycling in many ways is still stuck a little bit back where they just don't even think about it. And so I think it probably wasn't a big deal, but I'm also, you know, not sure. This actually reminds me, Joel, in my career, it was pretty funny. Like so often you'll be lumped in a town for a race start or something and people can't find toilets or whatever. And, you know, the question was always then, are you going to just take a nature break like a bush wee?
Yeah.
Very classy term. And the only rule that anybody ever had was not on church property.
Okay.
Like a bush wee was accepted almost anywhere. Like a little bit off, actually, that kind of rule, but never on,
church
property. So,
Well, look, it was.
By the way, none of the riders were doing that. I might add.
Are you sure?
Actually, no, but we don't have any footage of them doing so.
It was planned for a few years ago. Obviously, the pandemic got in the way of the stage happening there in 2020. Mike Tunison and Julius Vandenberg both stopped, lit candles in honor of COVID-19 victims.
That's beautiful, and I think that that's really beautiful.
And it was also the neutral part of the race. So at the end of the day, it's like I'm a little bit confused about it, but you know, it was part of the thing, right? Yeah,
and we got to sing on our podcast for the first time
and sung well. Yes. At that. Now you wanted to get Sam Bennett on for a chat today. I thought you meant Wayne Bennett, the football coach. He was a little bit discombobulated when I rang him at 6 a.m. this morning and said, "You sure you want me to talk about cycling?" I rang Sam. He said, "I'm a little bit busy, mate. He can't come on either."
Look, cycling knowledge leaps and bounds, Joel.
Thank you.
But that was a bit of an error. Poor Wayne Bennett. He'd be great. I'd love his opinion on esports, though. I think he's a bit of an older gentleman. He might find that a little bit discombobulating as well.
He's a workhorse. He still does stuff. Gets out there.
He does.
You mentioned Hessing before, Robert Hessing. He started with the bang, opening stages, team time trial. Now, I have some quirky concerns around this as well. Why don't they have more of these? Because they're extremely exciting and a great way to set the tone. What's the go?
They're crap.
You don't like them?
No.
You're not a fan.
No, okay. I love them. I love a team's time trial just like I love a team's pursuit. But I don't think they have any place in a grand tour.
Sure.
At all.
Sure.
And one of my biggest reasons for that, there are two elements to it. Firstly, I don't like them as the opening stage because I think Sam Bennett deserved the leader's jersey for his heroics in the next couple of stages.
The what jersey?
Rojo.
Okay. Yep.
But I also don't like them further in. And a big reason for that is cycling doesn't have a salary cap. And because of that, you are able to get these super teams. And in the past, it used to be the former iteration of now Ineos when it was Sky.
Yep.
And they would buy up all the big riders, particularly time trial riders, win the team's time trial by significant margins and already have a big foot in the door to win the general classification in a tour. I just think it goes against the whole point.
Yep. Okay.
And so I think if they did have salary caps, it would be a little bit different. I think we're a long way off that, but that's one of those great debates that everybody would have so many pros and cons for. I'm not sure cycling will ever get there. But I just don't think it's a great event. But also, I'm defensive of the Aussies, Joel, because Jumbo passed that Rojo jersey around like it was no one's business.
They just,
except Chris Harper and Rowan Dennis, the Aussies on Jumbo, they didn't get their go. Come on now.
We were chatting about Rowan and his supporting role, the perennial supporting
but
kind
see,
of role.
But see, if we had them in the Rojo, maybe I wouldn't be saying it's rubbish.
Maybe I don't know. It genuinely would be the green and Grojo if they were in that. But
look, you're hoping for that.
We saw Jumbo, you talk about super teams. We saw the early dominance. We saw Bennett come in for 2 and 3. Then at 4, we went over to Spain, got on the plane, and Primoz Roglic basically said, "Dude, hold my beer." Conquered, looked good, jumped to stage 5, though. Marc Soler does it for Spain in Basque Country.
After 2 years of the Spaniards not winning anything at the Vuelta, which was pretty good. And then if Primoz, Rog, as I like to
the
call him.
I call him the sticky tape man.
I really want him to wear the green jersey so we can call him Rog the Frog, but I don't know that that'll ever happen. He said, "Hold my beer, I'm taking the Rojo."
Yeah.
And now Evenepoel, the young upstart from Belgium, has, you know, said, "Hold my beer, I'm taking the Rojo."
Well, Jay Vine wants them all to hold his beer too.
I know, and Evenepoel I find really interesting, and I think in the next weeks we'll end up talking, deep diving a bit more on this, depending on how he ends up going in the rest of the Vuelta. But I can't in memory recall any other rider being so hotly debated about whether he's good or whether he's oversold.
Okay.
Like some people back him so much and are like, "Wow, this kid." And then there's others who are like, "Nah.
Meh.
Meh.
Meh."
Big deal.
Okay.
So, you know, hold my beer. We'll get back to that one.
My question on Soler, just quickly, could he have done it without receiving a water bottle from a rival team, Movistar, showing a bit of love?
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it?
That was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, Movistar, of course, the Spanish team, I think we like to see those moments because it always quite annoys me when a team soigneur won't give a rider hydration or something like that.
Yep.
You know, almost like, "No, you know, make them dehydrate and we'll beat them." That's not very sporting, is it? So
a little bit cruel and unusual.
And isn't it a little bit clever for Movistar to get their logo in a winning picture?
Oh, marketing genius.
Marketing
absolute.
Genius. Now,
we'll talk
him.
More about Rog. I think as Vuelta goes on and the question of why he is so good in Spain chasing four straight.
He likes the sangria. We can revisit that.
He's keen on the Rojo. Now, I want to just quickly before we finish on, I want to ask you about Jai Hindley, Ben O'Connor. We were chatting about Ben O'Connor last night. He was bummed about his glute injury. Do you think he's put that behind him?
Yes, I think his glute is definitely behind him. His injury, I think so too. I mean, BOC, as I've taken to calling him.
Bocky.
I think we need a nickname for everybody. He's still like top 20 GC in that first week. He's still up there.
Yep.
Some of the time gaps aren't really real because of that team's time trial. So, you know, wait and see. But both Ben O'Connor and our boy Jai.
And Jumpin' Jai Hindley.
Jumpin' Jai Hindley. Yeah. They're both in a really great position. We've got 16 Aussies out there. They've all been representing in some way. And so I think Aussie Watch is well and truly on. In fact, I reckon it'll be Aussie Cup pretty soon.
Oh, wow.
Where they're like, yeah, the Vuelta's going on, but who's the best Aussie each day?
Well,
it's a thing. We used to do it in the women all the time.
I'm all about the Aussie Watch. We were talking about the likes of Hindley and O'Connor. You know who we weren't talking about? Jay Vine.
So I know.
That's what I love. Let's stay on Australia. Moving on the Wheelhouse podcast. Kate Bates is here. My name's Joel Spebra, also here. Green and gold controversy, Kate Bates. This is big.
It is big.
Caleb Ewan.
Yep.
We've been talking about it since episode one. His tilt at Wollongong. I shouldn't laugh. It's not funny. He's not going to be at Wollongong.
It's not for him. It's not.
And he's not happy.
He's not happy. Not happy, Jan. Now, it's when he came out and so he won for the context stage in the Tour of Germany because the Vuelta, believe it or not, isn't the only bike race going on at the moment. And his quote after winning was, "I was preparing for Worlds, so I knew I had to climb quite good." We'll forgive the grammar there, but I think that he was in such good form in Germany, even with some lumps and bumps, because he anticipated that he would be selected for the Road World Championships. It is a course we don't expect to be for the pure sprinters. However, a race and the course is very much determined by how it is raced.
Okay.
So if 10 teams come with sprinters, then it will more likely be a sprinters race because the teams will choose to race it like that. It's not. It's different to a Grand Tour where they have all these mixed ambitions. They go in with a very clear strategy, backing a rider, and they ride to that plan. The Aussies have not backed Caleb. I'm a bit shocked. He broke the news ahead of Oz Cycling getting to announce the team.
Yeah.
So they were meant to announce the team earlier on in the week, but they delayed that because there were some appeals.
Yep.
That in itself is something we should talk about. But Caleb said, "This one felt really good. This is after his win, especially after the bad news that I won't be at my home world championship this year. Bearing in mind, Wollongong is literally a stone's throw from Bowral, where he grew up. To be honest, I don't have much to say on the matter other than I'm heartbroken. I won't be there to represent my country and that I believe I deserved to be there." Sob story over.
With the old finger. All good emoji.
I tell you, look, this is a hot tip, Joel. Yeah. If your wife ever sends you something with that emoji, I wouldn't really think all is good.
Just forget about it.
I definitely thought, and we've had a few texts, I might also say, around selection between kind of old riders because Oz Cycling did an exceptionally good job of keeping everything under wraps. So everybody who would usually kind of have a bit of insight into selection has been completely in the dark. No. So I actually text Brad McGee, he's held the leader's jersey in all the Grand Tours, Joel, and he was the former coach or manager of the Oz Cycling Men's Road Program. And I asked him what he thought about the selection mix. And he said, "Why wouldn't you take Caleb?" And this was before the news came out. "Why wouldn't you just chuck him in as the backup, like nothing to lose?" And so I think there's a bit of shockwave going out.
Wow.
But it gives you an idea of the strategy that the Aussies are chasing, yep. which is not a sprint, not a pure sprint. Not to discount Michael Matthews. You know, he's the sprinter that wins from a smaller select bunch.
Okay.
But the Aussies have put a line in the sand and said, we're not going for a sprint here.
Caleb says the sob story is over. Perhaps the sob story isn't over. The sob story was on in earnest earlier this week as well with some, I don't know, very confusing selection, non-selection, let's appeal it, let's not name teams. What was going on? They issued a seven-page statement saying we're not going to name
who's going. Was it seven pages?
Seven pages. Oh, we're not going to tell you. Because there's been a few appeals. What does that all mean? How what's the appeal process when it comes to representing your country?
Yeah, so there's a selection document, and I guess essentially where this falls apart a little bit is the selection document lists, you know, 10 performance indicators of things that you should have achieved. You know, it may be that you should be world class. It may be that you've done X number of races. But at the bottom of it, it says, this may, like, it's our discretion to not include any of this, right?
Yeah.
Which leaves it a little bit open to riders feeling a little bit aggrieved if they're not in the inner circle. And we need to bear in mind that some people, there's some athletes whose style is to be really close to management. They're quite buddy-buddy. They're quite relaxed. There's other athlete styles who are not there for conversation. They're not the same kind of communicators. They kind of talk with their legs and they're a little bit on the outside. And we have to remember that team dynamics have to exist with both kinds of personalities, understanding that to get the best result, you almost have to be a whisperer. So like the women's team manager on the day, Donna Ray Zielinski, and I tried to get her on today, Joel, but with all the selection drama, she felt that she wouldn't be able to answer many questions and it would be a bit of an awkward you know, First Amendment kind of chat.
Okay.
Is it first or sixth? Wherever it is that they say I'm invoking my right.
Yeah.
Fifth? That thing.
I don't know.
Oh, fifth. Well,
fifth.
Whatever.
Anyway,
we know what we're talking about.
I also, can I just quickly correct? I said pages, I meant paragraphs.
Oh, paragraphs. Because I was like, what on earth did they say in seven pages?
Yeah.
She is like an athlete whisperer where she has to bring in all these different personalities, get them on the same page. This doesn't happen in a day. They don't have one meeting. They have a whole range of meetings where they discuss it all. She's not part of the selection though. And she can't be because she can't put herself, compromise her ability to handle all the athletes if she's also been sitting there weighing in on who should or shouldn't be in the team, But you can imagine then that if a rider who performs exceptionally well, but maybe isn't on that inner circle in terms of the way they communicate or talk, that with that discretion within the selection document, if they're left out, they may feel as though, is that to do with my sporting performance or is that because I don't contribute enough on the WhatsApp chat or
wow.
I'm not as bouncy? Like it's a real, I think it's a really interesting thing. And then you fast forward to when the team is selected. They call the athletes and let them know. They also call the athletes and let them then know they're not in the team. So anybody who's expressed interest or made like a short list, they'll all get contacted. If you're not on the team, you then have a chance to appeal, which is the right thing.
Yep.
And they need to have them heard. Ultimately, you can then go to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. That's unlikely to happen. And part of that is resources, like how many athletes know how to access those kinds of services and in a really tight turnaround. But with a home world championship and on a course where some teams will bank on a sprint and others more climbing-based riders, it's the first time in a very long time that every Aussie has put their hand up. So from Jay Vine on one end as a climber, I mean, sorry, Jai Hindley on one end, I've got Jay Vine on my mind, to a Caleb Ewan.
Yeah.
They both put their hands up and
Vine
said,
on the mind. Yeah.
We reckon we can win on this course. Normally, it's so selective that the sprinters are either just not thought of or the climbers are not thought of. So, yeah, I mean, Mark Renshaw, who was kind of the head course designer, I think he's put himself straight in the middle of the pickle on this one by selecting this kind of course. But for what it's worth, and I don't want to labour on it too much, Joel, but I'm really bummed for Caleb. I'm really lucky to be part of the broadcast team for the World Championships, and I'm thrilled to be doing so. But I can tell you, if I wasn't part of it, I'd also be really bummed, because a home World Championships is something that most athletes will never get. Yeah. I never got it. Yeah. I got a home Commonwealth Games in Melbourne, but I never got a home World Championships. And to me, when I heard we were getting them and thought, okay, my goal now is to be on the broadcast of it, that's something I've aimed for years.
Yeah.
And Caleb, when he found out, it was literally in his backyard. So not just home in terms of Australia, but literally a stone's throw from the roads he grew up racing.
Boy from Barrel.
Even if he thinks he may not get around the course, it will be a negative career-defining thing for him.
Okay.
It's not sob story over. He will carry this, and I feel for him. And he's had, let's be honest, a pretty crappy year. I think he held on to Worlds to regain some form, and I think that's been a very big motivator for him. And I hope that he's got some support. You know, I really hope that he's got his darling wife and his kids that can remind him of kind of the bigger picture and to not get sucked into it too much. But
yeah, and interesting to see his performance moving forward as well, and what sort of effect that has mentally, because as you say, big goals and all of that. Michael Matthews, you say, will be there. Heading to the States beforehand, just quickly.
Yeah, well, different. I mean, everybody different preparations, but he's a punchy rider. He's got a lot of the endurance from the tour, and, you know, he's already got that in the bank. So for him doing something like the Vuelta, where there's not many stages for him, doesn't make sense. So he's off to the States. It's much more dynamic racing over there. In Maryland, he's racing. Look, he should win there, to be honest. And I think either way, it's pretty relaxed and pretty fun.
Yep.
So great prep for him. They're going to land back in Australia kind of toward the end of September, you know, around the 15th to 16th, mid-September. So a little bit of time yet. But again, in the coming weeks, Joel, we'll have so much to talk about in terms of world selection as all of the teams start getting announced.
Well,
they haven't yet.
You're concerned and excited America not facing the same issue. Just quickly, a few quick mentions. They've named their women's team.
Yes.
And a sprint specialist to head to the New South Wales South Coast,
yes.
Kate Bates.
Very interesting. So they've got seven riders, and really interesting a name I saw on there. I mean, most of them are the usual suspects. We've got Corinne Lebecki, you know, former winner of Flanders. People would know her as Corinne Rivera. And they've got all their Pro Tour riders. But they've got Skylar Schneider on there, who rides for Legion of Los Angeles. And she's a sprint, like a criterium specialist. So super fast.
Mm.
But it says to me that the USA are saying, we reckon this could come down to a sprint. And we will take someone. And Corinne Lebecki, who would normally be their fastest sprinter, they're almost taking like a dual attack there. And that says to me that the USA are going to be riding in a way to keep it together. All the way with you. So interesting.
Okay. Now let's, Wheelhouse Podcast. My name's Joel Spreber. Kate Bates is here too. Let's honour a legend quickly. There's going to be some tears, probably a few sighs of relief from her competitors. Seven-time world champion Lisa Brennauer has ended a ridiculously productive professional career with fourth in her final road race at the European Championships, Kate.
Yeah, look, she's Olympic champion on the track, world record in the team's pursuit. She's been world champion in the individual pursuit, world champion on the track. Sorry, individual time trial on the road, individual pursuit on the track. She's kind of done it all. To top it off, Joel, she's got to be one of the nicest riders, nicest people you'll ever meet. And in fact, I think that's part of why she's such a good time trialist, is because to a degree she was almost too nice in road races and lacked a bit of the animal
mongrel.
It came. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's not a criticism at all. Just a really wholesome woman, she will really be missed. I mean, I think there's probably some time trialers, Ellen Van Dyke, I'm looking at you, Marlon Roos, who won't miss her. So
both
much.
Friends of the Wheelhouse.
Yes.
Beautiful scenes as well after they finish on home soil, of course, in Munich. A few steins, few schnitties that they got together And a few tears as well. Okay, a job well done. Congratulations.
Yeah, we do jets and crackers and a cardi, a shardy. They do, they do steins and schnitties. Yeah, no, look, I think it was, we will always be talking about people who retire, and we will always be talking about how people retire, whether they get to go out on their own terms.
Yep.
For her to go out, have a final race in Munich, sensational. Like, I think it's just really fitting end of career. But while we're in Munich, I don't know if you noticed, but in the road race, mentioning Ellen van Dijk for the time trial, but she was European road race champion. She's very funny on social media. You need to check her out, people. She kind of wrote a tribute to the European champion's jersey before the race. Like, we've had such a beautiful relationship. It's been so lovely.
Oh, that's goodbye. A bit special. Yeah, ta-da now.
But she did hand it off, and it was won. The Dutchies, they kept it with Lorena Wiebes.
Your mate Wiebes.
Yes,
gold,
my mate.
Gold,
gosh, so I hope she comes to Wollongong so I can meet her. I'm not sure that they'll send a sprinter, but again, we can talk about that next week when we know.
Out-sprinting Italian Elisa Balsamo in a very tense final sprint. She only sort of started in that last 200 and really picked it up. It didn't look like she was going to get there. I loved a photo finish. 130 kilometres of absolute slog comes down to a tyre.
It does, I know.
Not even a tyre. Like, incredible finish.
I mean, you literally need to practice your throw. Yeah. If anybody's listening, you would have heard a big thud because I was, when I said throw, I couldn't help but throw my arms forward.
You were
back in
the saddle for a moment.
Sorry about
there.
That.
Yeah.
Now, I reckon the interesting part about that is that on one hand, I was like, oh, I'm kind of glad Balsamo didn't win it because then the rainbow jersey wouldn't get, the rainbow jersey takes precedent. So the European jersey wouldn't have been worn. And then I remembered that Worlds are in a couple of weeks, so it wouldn't have really mattered anyway. I'm not sure that the course in Wollongong is for either of them, so I reckon we might still get our rainbow jersey and our European champions jersey in the peloton next year, but great racing.
Okay, sixth Euro road race win, say that 10 times fast for the Netherlands as well.
Yeah, and the voice coaches are just writing that one down like, great drill.
There's a tongue twister. Gold, gold, gold. Now, to finish off today, we'll stay on the gold. What is it with Aussie athletes and bleached blonde hair, Kate Bates?
You noticed. Yes,
I sure did.
The Junior World Championships are on in Tel Aviv at the moment. The Aussie juniors have this huge history of winning gold medals. Like, we have such talent in the juniors and always have, and I like to think always will with the way we do our programs. The weird bit, and only the fellas get involved in this, is all of the team, sprinters, teams pursuit, endurance, all of them, they bleach their hair. And it never comes out a nice colour, Joel. It looks like this funny yellow, bleachy, whitey. Cannot imagine the regrowth. With this in mind, it made me wonder, as long as I can remember, this has been happening.
Yeah.
So when I went to Junior Worlds in 99 and 2000, the whole team did it then.
Yep.
And so I messaged a couple of my colleagues who are a little bit older, Ashley Hutchinson, he was world Teams Pursuit champion. And when he was a junior, he did it. And I said, when did this start? And he said, well, long before his days.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, can we remember why? Because I couldn't remember why. And the landing position on it is just cause. Nobody can, like, it's been going on for decades. Yeah. Nobody really remembers why anymore. And I think they're scared to not do it because of the bad luck it may bring. It's become a thing.
And not just in cycling, if I may.
Really?
Absolutely not. Oh. Former Australian cricket captain Michael Clarke bleached tips for a large part of his career.
I thought that was more, wasn't that like fashion related?
A little bit, but also he also wanted to look like his idol, the late great Shane Warne as well, who had that natural blonde hair with maybe a tiny bit of colour added to it as well.
I reckon these fellas spend more time and money on their dues than the ladies. Well, and I might add that the women do not do this. And I'm quite glad because I think for some of these young ladies and their beautiful long hair, for them to do a sink bleach job would be quite devastating.
Well, another
would
one,
be hairdressers crying
around
the world, around the nation.
Andrew Johns, the former football player, the rugby league player,
once
took the field with orange hair. So not sure where he was doing, what he was doing, what he was thinking.
That's not enough bleach. What happens when you have dark hair and you don't leave it on for long enough. You end up looking like a copper top.
Who are your favourite bleached blonde Aussie athletes? Let us know. Get onto the socials and let us know, because there's a long list. We could go through them. Run out of time for this week, though. It's been a lot of fun. So much to cover. We've covered it, Kate Bates.
Big, massive few weeks ahead, Joel. So I think that we're going to have to have less wandering conversations in order to tick it all off in the next coming weeks. I'm excited.
Yeah.
And we do have some big plans coming up as well with Wollongong, some special episodes. So stay tuned, everybody. We're just like hitting our stride.
We're popping a wheelie at the wheelie house.
With our new merchandise.
Yeah, indeed. That's right. The Wheeled Championship's coming up as well. thank you for being along for the ride. Easily digestible, mostly factual. This is the Wheelhouse Podcast. I'm Joel Spreadborough. Kate Bates is here as well. We'll see you next time.